Other than that, NFP is just a natural form of postponing or achieving pregnancy. But if it's disconnected from faith, the love between the couple themselves, how then that love then nourishes their family, creating the domestic church and the home, where there is that fecundity, that generosity, then spills out, and where there's a Christian home there, Christ is present, and then that home, and then the other family, and the other family, and then you have a parish, and the local church is vibrant. That's the vision. You're going, yeah, Father, I can see it on your faces, but you know what? What I love about teaching young couples is they are excited if you're excited. If you tell them you are going to be on this incredible journey of life and love with another person who's going to share your history and your joys, your sorrows, your sickness, and this and that, what an incredible person you have sitting right beside you. And they'll kind of go, So, what's absolutely essential is that your local bishop has the primary responsibility for marriage preparation and to make sure that he does everything he can within the resources within his diocese and the people that he has to make sure that marriage preparation is the best that it can be. Talking about the window of time, though, where we fall down as a church over and over and over again is that we do not have premarital preparation all the way down the line to offset the barbaric hedonistic culture that we're having to deal with today. There is no way that you can, well, by God's grace, let me back up. Normally speaking, there is no way that you can alter a major part of a person's personality in one day. Now, you could take kids on a retreat or something, they're crying on Sunday afternoon, they've had such a love experience on the retreat, but the reality is that, from especially a psychological standpoint, it takes about 96 hours of therapy to change one major aspect of personality. Concentrated time. And so here we're trying to whack at major parts of a marital relationship in a day. Yeah. 2 weekends, better. And then, this is the classic, and I'll give you my frustration here. We'll say, you know what? We have 3 months in our diocese where you have marriage preparation. And then diocese go, well, that's not enough. Let's make it 6 months. Yay, okay, we're going to do 6 months marriage. I mean, priests have years and years and years of training, you know, to be ordained. Okay, and then let's go 9 months. Now we're kicking. 9 months of marriage preparation. What I found, though, is that nothing happens. Nothing happens. A couple come in for marriage preparation and they'll fill out the initial paperwork. The priest will say, this is what you need to do. When you're thinking about getting married, you should be giving a date anyway, but they do. Let me pencil it in, which becomes the date. And then we'll come back in a few weeks, which ends up about 2 months. Then they might fill out prepare or a focus, and then maybe a couple weeks, 3 weeks, four weeks after that, the priest will go over that, or the deacon, or whatever. And then before you know it, it's kind of like right up to the, getting close to the wedding date. Everything's been finalized. Uncle Joe's got his plane tickets. The club's been, And then if you come across any problems, unless there's a derailment impediment or something that's really, that morally you cannot officiate at that wedding, the wedding has to occur. And what have we done for that couple? I have had it happen to me over and over and over again this is a defense of what I'm doing right now is a defense of thorough marital preparation, extended over time, not just immediately before wedding. A person will be petitioning for annulment. They come in with their marital history. 10, 12, 14 pages of personal stuff, family backgrounds, this, dating experiences, this and this and this and this and that. Tears, sometimes ink, is just run on the paper from people crying over things. And they'll look at me with all honesty and say, Father, I have a question to ask you. Oh, what's that? Why didn't the priest ask me any of these questions before I got married? Or my husband, maybe we would not have gotten married. So, maybe they were one of those couples that didn't want to hear anything, receive anything, and now, in retrospect, they're coming back and blaming the church. I'm just saying that it happens so frequently. You have to say, how can we do things better? And I am convinced, and I hope you are convinced, that we have a truth, as one person said very beautifully, that we can offer to the world and offer to our young people. Whenever it's done properly, they come back for more. So those young airmen that I talked about, I said, how many, you know, we had a little feedback thing, you know, a little survey, how many of you come back to this? And 100% of them basically said, we'd recommend this to our peers because it was new, different, exciting, challenging, beautiful. And again, who wouldn't want that? Like, how many of you have gone by the table set up, you know, the wedding set up that's outside? You know, gone up the escalator there, and they said, you want to have your special thing here? I'm looking at it, I'm going, what can I come up with to have a dinner party here? Yeah, I probably couldn't get away with a collar on, though, but what could I... God, it's really inviting. Captures your attention every time you go up the darn escalator. Like, you've got that really nice... That's the wow factor that we have that we can offer. So, there is a distinction between marriage preparation program requirements and prerequisites for marriage. For the church, prerequisites are pretty basic. You know, if you're walking, talking, and I won't bring up, used to be what was called a mortal sin, kind of, maybe I shouldn't bring that up. Do you want to bring it up?
There's a 15 minutes.
I have 15 minutes?
Yeah, if you want to start getting people to talk.
Okay, I always do run over us here, so thank you for... There's a guy by the name of Sanchez who said that you only needed the moral capacity if you could commit a mortal sin to enter to marriage. It was like a negative way of saying you could actually enter into marriage if you could commit a mortal sin. If you couldn't commit a mortal sin, then you couldn't get married validly. That was kind of an odd way of telling, you know, capacity, but we've come a long way since Sanchez a few centuries ago to where we're at now. Now we start doing our premarital kinds of inventories focus and this and that. Finding the delicate balance. A bishop does not have the authority to impose greater restrictions on marriage that is allowed him in either in church law. So there are some special norms of our own bishops' conference, what they call the complementary norms, that allow local bishops to be able to make adjustments to their own local conditions regarding the celebration of marriage. And in those norms also they talk about, in the first section of that, requirements for marriage prep programs without going into a lot of detail in the content of them, just saying that it needs to be done. So you have that balance. The balance that you need to find, and this is what I've been harping on, I hope you've heard it over and over again, is how do you present it? How do you present this wonderful, wonderful gift? If we present it well, then people are going to receive it, even maybe reluctantly, and they'll say, after all of it, I'm glad I had that experience, or I'm glad we learned that. When we try to, in this generation, use any marriage preparation as a club so they can get married in the church, that's like Sanchez saying, you know, if you can't commit a mortal sin, you can't get married. Well, it's as harsh and as uncritical as that. In deference to my brother clergy, we've been hammered over and over again by couples that have disappointed us. Over the years, it's very easy just to, you pour your heart out for couples and you want so much for them and you take them out to eat and spend hours of your own personal time getting to know them and they're coming to Mass on Sunday and you think, God, this is going to be a great family to have a couple in my parish, and then you don't see them again. And that's a heartache that the clergy especially feel, a lot of disappointment. And so on our part, we have to constantly get past that to, and this is what I do, and I would say this to any of my brother priest, I always try to approach a new group of young people or a couple that's preparing for marriage with the freshness of love on my part as the freshness of love that they have for each other. And if I can do that, then I can be sitting down with couples or giving presentations. If I can't do that anymore, aloha, shivinyam. So that's for yourselves too. Freshness of heart, spirit, the nobility of this thing that we're trying to do for our couples and all of its different parts, especially with the beautiful methods that are available now to couples to help them realize the fullness of life and love that they can offer to each other. That's the goal. That's the goal. And NLP is a very important part of that, especially in this very, very corrupt and hedonistic culture where they've not heard this beautiful, beautiful message of embodying love. Questions? Yes?
From the point of law perspective, though, wouldn't NLP differ from other marriage prep requirements per se, because unlike other requirements that are encouraging good behaviors, NLP addresses something in contraception, which is an intrinsic evil contradiction of the law. It could be technically considered independent of marriage, since it's a violation of the promise to be open to life, to get the promise before saying I do. So would that give greater weight to an NLP requirement versus, say, a life skills component or those other marriage progression types?